Welcome to the Team Behind the Team podcast. I am your host, Donnie Mabe. This is the monthly show focused on building conversations around the team-based model approach to athletic performance, strength and conditioning, sports medicine, sports science, mental health and wellness, and sports nutrition. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Team Behind the Team podcast. This month, we have a special Olympic edition episode, and we interview the most awesome Mark Henry. And before we get into some of this episode, I want to welcome Billy Crawford to the podcast. He's interning here this summer, and Billy's going to have some stuff to say in here in a sec. So, Billy, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, Coach Donnie. It's a true honor to be on the podcast with you and also with Mr. Mark Henry. This is something I've been involved with for a long time, professional strongman and strength sports. I've known Mark since I was really little, so it's definitely a privilege to be on the panel with y'all today. Mr. Mark, this episode is just going to be, this man is very, I guess, looked upon in the world of strength. You know, he is a two-time Olympian. He's won the Pan American Games. He's a professional strongman, probably one of the strongest human beings ever walked the planet. His accolades stack up like no other. This man has the heaviest super total of all time, which is when you combine your squat, bench, and deadlift, and your clean and jerk combined. So if you want to talk about measurements on a barbell, this guy has the biggest accolades, accomplishing those types of lifts, and not just on the barbell, but Mr. Mark Henry has multiple world records in strongman with stone lifting and other old time feats of strength. But not also that, he's had a tremendous career, a long lasting career in the WWE, which went on for over 25 years. And Mr. Mark Henry's worked with some of the best in the field, but I think everyone's in for a treat for this episode today.
No, Billy, I agree. And, Billy, just want to thank you for everything you're doing for us this summer, helping with the podcast. Billy has not only a passion, but a history in strongman. And so that's why Billy's definitely vital for this interview. Billy, I would say, too, just to add to that before we play the episode, wouldn't you say that Mark Henry, he's one of the most strongest, impressive human beings that's ever walked the planet, but equally impressive, he's a person of what? Just kindness, humility, care. He loves people. You can speak to that a little bit.
I would say he's, when you see him, he's definitely a giant of a man when you're physically speaking, but also too, within his heart, he's a very kind and loving and a faithful man in the way he walks his life on a day-to-day basis. He's not just a big, huge guy who lifts heavy weights. He's also got a heart and compassion for people around him. So that's something that speaks true volume to who he is as a person.
Yeah, he's truly a special person, athlete, human being. He gives back to so many people. I know he's helped me a lot through the years. I've known him for a long time. So hopefully, to all our listeners, this will be an incredible episode. Dial in, tune in, share across your platforms. And hey, here's the interview, part one. Enjoy, and we'll see you on the flip side. With that, our special guest, good friend of mine, but world champion, man of all talents and abilities, Mark Henry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donnie. Thank you. Billy, I watched you since you was a little kid.
Appreciate it, Mark.
Yeah, hey, boy, wipe your nose. And now to see you in college is amazing.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You made it.
I'm trying to make it, I'll tell you. I'm not the world's strongest man, but...
take it easy on these co-heads out here. Right. Well, hey, handsome guy.
Mark, you know, again, thank you for... We know you got a lot going on. You're a busy guy and just so humble and gracious to give back. What's been going on? We know your son. Congrats to Jacob. Give the listeners a little bit of what's going on with you right now, your family. We're going to get into your history in a minute, but give us what's going
on. Man, I retired from pro wrestling in 2019. Right on the onset of COVID, and just focused on my family. My son is, as you mentioned, state champion wrestler, went to Oklahoma, the evil empire, the enemy.
right?
He just had to stick it to me. All them years of me telling him what to do, this is how he get back at me. Go to OU. Ain't that horrible?
Mark, so what...
But I'm proud of him. I'm proud.
Me too.
And I'm happy for him.
I got to ask
a
question.
But I'm telling you, on that campus, it was hard dropping him off in Norman.
So, Mark, are you going to put on that maroon a little bit? You're going to have to, right?
Oh, maroon? They maroon? Oh, you talking about A&M. because that Oklahoma Crimson and Cream, I'm not gonna put it on.
I love it.
Listen, I told him, I said, I will wear an OU shirt if I have an all black shirt with OU on it. That's it.
Stipulation.
I'm not wearing red. I'm not doing it, Donnie. It's like my brother and cousins all went to A&M. Mm-hmm. And they would give me like Texas A&M shirts, man. They would hit Goodwill before I could hardly get back to Austin. Can't wear no Texas A&M shirt.
No.
OU shirt in Austin.
Not in Austin.
You got a little burnt orange in your blood then, yeah?
Man, it's in my blood, man. Oh, I cry. I still cry when Texas lose.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible.
I know. We were up there this year. I hadn't been to the game in a while. We got beat, obviously. I was a heartbreaker, man.
Mm.
We had it, but they took it, so it is what it is.
But you know what, man? Texas ran into a buzzsaw this year. Like, that Michael Penix kid, you look at what he did in that game. If they played that game all over again, ain't no way he could do that again. It was like somebody hitting two half-court shots to win a game. One at the half and one at the finish. It don't happen. He just, man, he had the day of his life.
Yeah, he was in the zone. I mean, he couldn't be stopped. And that receiver
and Texas
was,
still had a chance to win.
And they weren't dropping balls that day. So it's kind of a combination.
Yeah, it was just a great day for them. It wasn't no fault of Texas's other than, you know, maybe Quinn could have threw the ball maybe a foot and a half lower. Mm-hmm. At that last pass he threw. Yeah. But I guarantee you he done lost a lot of sleep over that pass. Yeah. And those are the ones that make you a better athlete and a better competitor. I don't know about you, but I'm like I said, I cry when I lose. Mm-hmm. Like, it takes me a while to get over a loss. So it's better to put the work in and not feel that pain.
Yeah, no,
and I know Quinn, if he ain't, he seemed like one of those guys that's a little salty. Mm-hmm. And that's put that on replay. Whenever you get tired, whenever you're feeling a little full of yourself, like, play that video again of that last pass. Mm-hmm. Like, if he drops that thing down a foot and a half, Mitchell catches it and scores and Texas wins.
It's on, yeah, it's on.
So, you know, you got to stay humble.
Mm-hmm. How you feeling about the Longhorns going to the SEC?
I love it.
You excited for that?
I think that Coach Sark did a good job of putting together a team. Some people think that it's just about the individuals or it's just about how much talent you got. There have been a lot of teams that had talent that didn't win. You know, I mean, somebody could get hurt or they just get too full of themselves, whatever the factor is. The team with the best talent don't always win. It's the team that's the toughest. It's the team that's willing to sacrifice. Like, I know sacrifice. When I was competing, I never went on spring break. I ain't never in college 4 years. Never went to spring break.
No, it's part of your DNA, though.
I went home one Christmas, and that was because I had already made the Olympic team, and I didn't have to go to the U.S. Open or World University Games. So I got to go home, and it was weird. You know, like, when you're not working and you're a great athlete, like, you start to feel like you're cheating your team or you're cheating yourself. Like, that's the level of competitiveness you have to be great. So you can put in good work and be good.
You feel complacent at some points when you're not doing much.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely would lose sleep. I didn't lose very much. But when I went to the World Championships and I would lose, like, it just made me want to go home and work harder. And I did realize that people I was competing against was taking drugs. And in my case, the IOC was not very helpful because they would suspend people for taking drugs. Yeah. And then they would come back like stronger because once they tested positive, they took them off the drug testing protocols. So they would go.
The rotation?
Yeah, they would go off and get stronger. And I started to think that they was getting caught on purpose. So like, you know, the year before the Olympics, they was off of the drug testing policies. So, you know, because being under suspension.
And your first Olympics was at the end of the Cold War era with all them Eastern European countries and a lot of European countries still doing government doping and stuff
for
their athletes.
I'm gonna put this in perspective to you. At the Junior World Championships, I got beat by Andre Chimerik. I got the bronze, and Andre Chimerik won. He beat me by 20 kilos.
That's a large
That's a lot, but that's, you know, that's under, like, 40 pounds.
Right, yeah.
42 pounds. That dude, the next year, I mean, I'm angry. I'm going to get him. I snatched 182.5 and clean and jerk 225. I'm ready.
At the junior?
I was a senior next year.
Senior next year, okay.
He snatched 190 and clean and jerk 235. He gained like, he beat me by like 60 kilos. You don't gain like that in a year.
Not that short.
Especially at that level. That level
like
of athletics.
Like when you at the top, man, we nickel and diamond.
It's 1-2 kilos.
Oh, man, 2.5 kilos. Yeah, it was awesome. I did it.
Wow.
40 pounds.
That level of an increase. In the
Come
window.
On, Donnie. And then so when you point that out to the USOC, you know, and the IOC, they like, hey, look, you better stop complaining. You're going to get the sport kicked out of the games. That's what Thomas Aon said to me. You got to stop complaining. You're going to get the sport kicked out. Yeah. No, y'all going to get the sport kicked out because y'all don't let people. And I quit. You lost potentially the most famous weightlifter of all time. Naeem Suli Mangalu, maybe is his name. If you mention his name, people at every corner of the world will know who it is. You mentioned my name. I could have stayed in lifting another 4 years.
Easy. Yeah.
Minimum. And I would have probably would have got my numbers up to maybe a 190, 230. But I quit because it wasn't fair.
Is that why you transitioned mostly and you took the opportunity so fast for WWE, think? Is because
I went on and went to make – and I ain't never make no money lifting. I did it out of love and respect of the game. No, made no money.
That's man's work right there.
I had
a job. I worked at the YMCA. I was a full-time student.
Wow.
I made $22,000 that year before the Olympics.
And trained.
And then I was on O job, so the Olympic Job Opportunities Program, they would match whatever you made. So I made 40-something thousand that year. Made $40,000 a month.
Yeah, but again, like you had such a love for it. It, you know?
But that's why it hurt so bad that the Olympic Committee, and now you got Michael Phelps and people like that coming out going, hey, the International Gaming Commissions are not doing enough to help the athletes because people in America— drug testing is pretty strong.
It's a witch hunt.
Like you would have to be, you know, you have to be out there bad in America for us to come after you.
Yeah.
But overseas, they don't. Man, they like if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying to win.
Yeah.
They don't care. They pay their athletes.
Yeah.
The government does.
That's winning at all costs, though, right?
Yeah, but you know what, man? You want to hear some bad news?
What you got?
Four of the world champions in the super heavyweight category, dead. It's only one Olympic champion in my weight class still alive.
Who's that?
This is I think Elijah Day.
Oh, Lasha Talakazi.
Yeah.
It's the new guy, yeah.
He's the only one still alive.
Yeah, he's young. He's
short. Manfred Nerlinger, gone.
Shorten his life, huh?
Wow.
And they all start dying around 50.
Yeah.
Because of heart attacks and, you know, stuff like that. Because all them drugs.
Yeah.
Naeem Suli Mangalu. He was a dwarf, almost.
Uh-huh.
Ain't no way he should have died of a massive heart attack at 46 years old.
Oh, my God.
With two babies.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's way young, yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Listen, man, you keep that gold medal.
That's like Lasha Talakazi.
I'd rather be alive.
Lasha Talakazi, he's the Olympic champion right now for the heavyweights, and he's 6'6", and I think he's pushing 200 kilos. He's like 187 kilos. He's very big. He's from Georgia, but yeah, I don't know how much longevity he'll have after his career. He's only 29 years old right now. He's chasing the 600-pound clean and jerk and a 500-pound snatch.
I've seen him lift, and I just go. I think about Saturday Night Live when they did the All Drug Olympics.
What was this?
Dude is a science project. I mean, I ain't hating.
Yeah.
Hey, if you want to put on a show, I'm a showman. Yeah. You know, I'm in it for the money, and I'm in it to entertain the people.
Yeah.
But if you're gonna compete against somebody, then you can't do drugs. You know, you can't cheat to win. You know, like people talk about the Hollywood actors, you know, they take their steroids and all of this blood doping so they can get in that shape that you
ready
see
for
in
that
the
movie.
Movies.
For the movie, yeah.
They're showmen.
Life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're not competing against nobody.
Yeah. And that's what's so impressive, I think, about your career as well, is you went from an Olympic weightlifting background in a drug-tested sport. Obviously, people were cheating. But then you progress yourself, and even a couple years later, you know, Dr. Terry Todd, he started the Arnold Strongman Classic 2002, and that's not a drug-tested sport at all. And people have known the history of strongman from the 80s, and there's been greats like John Paul Sigmundsson have died. He died at 32 of a heart attack. First man ever won the World Strongman four
Wilson.
Times. Odie Wilson.
He died. It's been a ton of them guys.
And the fact that you were able to go and transition from a sport of Olympic weightlifting and then into
that's
strongman
incredible.
And dominate at that level is, that just speaks in parallel to itself.
I was telling you earlier, before we came in here, I'm the only person walking the planet that's been a world champion in three things that have nothing to do with each other.
That's ridiculous.
And people say, man, like, you must be crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, I am. I hate losing so bad that if I pick something, I'm going to try to dominate at it. Man, the podcasting world and radio world, my education was in kinesiology.
Right, yeah.
I got the number one show in Sirius XM in sports. Because I'm competitive.
Yeah.
I want to win.
So good.
You know, I'm talking about in life. I want to be super dad. Mm-hmm. Super husband. Whatever it is, I'm trying to win.
Yeah.
Next level.
And people don't live by that because it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard
sometimes. You got to work.
Yeah. And sacrifice.
Okay, so... That's such a rare mentality. What do you see in athletes today that's different?
We live in the world of the chest beaters. You know, when I say the chest beaters, there's a wide receiver go get one catch for 12 yards, and he beating his chest, hitting his helmet, jumping up and down. You got one catch, bro.
Yeah.
You might not get another ball thrown at you the rest of the game.
They glorify any moment
great.
They get.
We glorify mediocrity.
Yeah.
Like now, if you do what that kid Golden did against Texas last year at Houston, that now is playing for Texas, you got 12 catches, 140 yards, two or three touchdowns. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to see you walk off the field. I'm number one.
Pop the champagne bottle.
You okay? You can beat your chest.
Yeah.
You did that. That's who I cheer for.
Yeah,
if you reap the benefits, then yeah, you should get the reward. But we glorify people that are not, they not there yet. And these coaches have got to quit babysitting these kids and tell them, I want you to celebrate. I do. But you celebrate when I give you the nod, hey, you got it.
Yeah.
But until then, don't let me see you chest beating. I would be hard to coach. I never coach my kids in nothing. I'll pay the money for a Donnie Mabe to be the strength coach. And then I'll look in the back and I'll go, Donnie, he needs to finish his pull on that snatch or that clean jerk. You know, I might interject, but I ain't going to say nothing to them. Because I want to be dad. I don't want to be coach.
Yeah, that's good wisdom. That's good wisdom.
And some parents, they want to live vicariously through their kids. So they want to,
yeah.
They watch Rocky too many times. They want to be Mick. You can win, Rock.
Oh, yeah.
They're not cheerleaders. They're pushing, and the kids break. And then they end up hating the sport that they play or the game that they play. I never did that.
I was talking to some parents about this the other day, and you can have the genetics, you can have the coaching, you can have the resources, but if you don't have the drive and your
coach, like, ain't gonna work.
To your point, if your parents are pushing you, and even in college or whatever, you are not going to make it. It's going to be short.
Yeah.
It's going to be short run.
And you're going to waste money.
Yeah.
And I don't like wasting money.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hear you talking about, no, for sure. You got to fall in love with the process, too, though. That's what I hear you saying a little bit. You know,
I do love the getting up in the morning, get my hot tea. You know, I quit taking, like, the fake sugar. So now I made simple syrup, or I'll mix, like, honey water. And then I'll put it in my tea. Like, it's a process. And I look forward to that process. And when I trained, I was the same way.
I would go to the gym.
I would get over to UT probably 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning. I would train heavy, whether it's the structural work, squats, back squats, or deadlifts. Or if I was doing strongman, we would do the loading part early. And then later on, I would go, sometimes I wouldn't even leave. I would bring food with me. Mm-hmm. I would eat and I would go to sleep down on the floor in the gym.
Wow.
And then I would wake up and I would train again and do technique.
Wow.
Because I looked at it like it was a job.
Yeah.
Like I got to put the work in. Mm-hmm. And I remember Governor Bush used to come in and work out in the gym. And we used to have this routine all the time. Every time he would see me and I would see him, I'm like, what you looking at? He's like, what you looking at? And we start walking toward each other like we were going to fight. And then one day the new guy showed up on his detail. And he was like, stop. And threw his coat back. He was going to shoot me. I was like, hey, man.
It's better be a smackdown in the weight room.
Tell him you know me. Bro.
Wow.
Like, it was tense.
Wow.
But the thing about Bush is he was a routine guy.
Yeah. He had a ritual of a
day. Every day he came at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He trained the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. And he went out the same door, got in the car the same. It was like, when you great at something, you got to be... You got to be a stickler for it, man. You can't just get by on talent.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to be a little crazy.
I'm curious to...
Or excessive.
Yeah. Mark, I'd love to, because I've seen you in this element. You obviously the world's strongest man, world champion in three sports. What was that like, that transition into WWE? What was that like? Like, what was it that drew you into that? And then, like, what was that like?
My grandmother was a wrestling fan when I was a little kid.
Okay.
So man, I love my granny. So I wanted to be with her because she would cook for me. She was like, she was funny. Like, should have been on TV funny. She was hilarious. And so I wanted to be around her all the time. So I would go to wrestling matches with her. Nobody else in my family watched wrestling, Donnie. Nobody.
That's wild. Granny does.
I have never got a WrestleMania ticket in 24 years for anybody in my family. Nobody asked. Nobody care.
Really?
They don't care. They like, hey, man, I saw you on a commercial the other day for wrestling. That's great, man. That's it.
That's wild.
It ain't like, oh, man, hey, when y'all come to Houston, man, can you give me some tickets? Yeah. Just Mark. Wow. And I love that, though.
Yeah.
Like, my family, they down for me just because I'm me, mm-hmm. not because of what I could have done for them. Or, you know, I talked to my cousin. She got her son was one of the McDonald's All-Americans going to Memphis to play basketball. He'll probably play in the NBA. He driven, you know, like he want to be great. He told me when he was 12, I'm going to be next you. I was like, man.
That's big talk.
That's big talk. But you do know that I was more than talented, right? He's like, oh, no, I'm going to be good. Watch. He good. Yeah. And he wasn't playing. He cried when he lose. I watched him. I went to the state tournament 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
And watched them play. And every year he got better. He got bigger, thank God. And now he's at Memphis training with Penny Hardaway. And he's going to be a great player. Mm-hmm. But it didn't happen by accident. He's living, you remember that book, A Purpose-Driven Life?
Yeah.
He living a purpose-driven life. Mm. Like, he feels like, if I could do this, my mom don't have to work no more. That's his goal. Hey, when you're trying to save somebody, it's a different level of, you know, they're my cousins. I love everybody, but I got a wife. I can't be buying people houses and cars and putting all the kids through school. I got two kids of my own.
Yeah, I told Mark the volleyball team we're training the other day, and I was talking about what you were talking about, that you got to have a dream and a purpose. But the bigger the dream, the more reasons you got to have to achieve it. You got to have more reasons than just like, I want to be, you know, famous or make money. You know, it's got to be more reasons than that.
Yeah, it's way deeper than that. I saw Vasily Alexeyev when I was eight or nine, and I wanted to be him at nine. They threw roses at him.
They glorified him.
Man. They glorified him, and I wanted that. I never prayed to God, God, please give me all the talent in the world. I want to be rich. I ain't never prayed it. A day in my life, still. Okay, maybe that one time in Vegas. I never prayed that prayer. It was like, man, I want to be famous.
When you started,
I want to be just like Alexeyev.
When you started lifting, did you know that you would come to the heights and level that you were at? Obviously, in today's world, like when you started powerlifting through high school and you started getting a lot of recognition by national magazines and coverage and stuff. Did you think coming out of high school and kind of transition to weightlifting that you'd have the career later down the road that you have today?
I didn't think that I would have the career that I had, but I knew that I was going to be the greatest powerlifter ever because the trajectory that I was on. Man, my squat record just got broke this year.
Louisiana,
by
wasn't
that
it?
Kid in Louisiana.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like
how long has that stood?
It's like 30 years. Plus years.
Oh, God. Wow, that's
just
long.
Now broke that record.
Your other records are still standing, though.
The total still stands,
yeah.
But he broke the squat, and somebody broke the deadlift, too. but Gene Bell's son. He was a 220 and deadlifted 810 or 815 or something like that. But like I wanted to be great. I wanted to be famous. I wanted people to see me and come up and shake my hand and get autograph. I wanted to sign autograph. That was a big deal. Like, if some, man, I went to the state tournament my sophomore year, and one of the officials came over with the bill, you know, that had all of the talent, all of the athletes on it. Yeah. And he was like, hey, can you sign this for me? Bro, I felt so good. I felt, hey, you might as well have wrote me a check for $1 million.
That's an incredible story.
Is that not nuts?
Yeah, yeah.
How does the littlest thing make you feel special?
Yeah.
One autograph?
You didn't care about the money. You didn't care about all that.
Man,
you
care about the, you wanted, I still don't care about money.
You want to inspire
money.
The people and to show them that you did it for the love of the sport and that you just wanted to be a, you know, a great athlete overall.
Yeah,
you know?
I wanted to be highly regarded. Like I, and then when I came to Austin, then I was around Dr. Terry Todd, who Terry was the first strength coach. There was no such a thing as a strength coach before him. Like Terry traveled the world. Like you remember the movie Conan
the Barbarian,
oh, yeah.
And he was like, I never traveled for spoils. The only thing I ever collected was swords. I wanted to steal. I wanted to travel the world and beat everybody and take their swords. Yeah. Never did. Hey, the crews took the money. And they robbed and pillaged after they conquered. All he did was take the general's sword.
Taking a man's sword is taking a man's dignity back in those days.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, that was Dr. Todd. That was Terry.
Yeah.
Terry was taking swords.
Yep.
He was traveling all over the country teaching every university in America. They should have a statue of Dr. Todd on this campus because he was the one that said that every sport needs a trainer that trains them for the activity that they do. Come on, that's enough. He ain't have to do all the accomplishments that he did, write all the books he wrote. Mm-hmm. You go in the north end of the football stadium on the fifth floor, they got the Letcher Stark Center. That's his collection.
Yeah. It's the biggest privately owned collection in the world.
The biggest private collection in the world.
Yeah.
You can go in there and see Muhammad Ali gloves, Jack Johnson gloves.
Some of the first ever barbells and lifting equipment in the world.
Man, the first treadmill ever made is in there.
First elliptical, first stationary bike.
I mean, just like it's hard to fathom when you walk through there all of the history. I mean, from Andre the Giant and wrestling.
Right.
And the history of wrestling all the way back to the late 1800s, early 1900s, Louis the Mighty Sear. Gama.
Yeah.
And people like, it's so much about the world of physical culture that Terry and Jan did, and they put that on me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, if you don't learn, that means you was an idiot or you was just damn lazy. Mm-hmm. you just didn't have no ambition or nothing, no interest in it. I loved it like Terry loved it. Terry saw that. Mm-hmm. He was seeing my face when I started talking about these historically great people, and I go, I could do it. Terry said, no, you can't. I was like, yes, I can. What? Show me. Where is it? Like, we traveled. I was Conan.
Yeah.
I lifted the Denny Stones. The only thing that I didn't get to do, and that was because Terry was scared I was going to hurt myself, was there's a anchor in Nova Scotia by a guy named John McCaskill. And he died lifting that anchor.
McCaskill's anchor, yeah.
It stabbed him in the side when it got off balance. He tripped. I said, I ain't tripping, Terry. I ain't going to trip. Terry was like, no, we're not going to do it. And he never let me do it.
Wow.
What's the anchor weigh?
It's like 760 or something like that.
Oh, my God.
But at that point, I was lifting 900 pounds. Mm-hmm. So you got to make it relative. Who you talking to? You see, I get a little juiced, fired up. I'm easy to get fired up, man, when it comes to like competing about something. I knew I could do it.
And this is historical stuff. Like,
yeah,
this
everything is historical, I went and did it. They said the Thomas Inch used to be called the unliftable. Yeah. It's the Thomas Inch now because I lifted over my head.
You're the first person to do it and the only person to ever do it. 172 pounds.
There were three people that lifted Apollon's wheels.
Yeah.
Norbert Szymanski.
I've seen you do this.
John Davis. And they said that Adolf Apollon did it, but there's no footage or no proof that he actually did it. I lifted it three times the same day for each one of the people.
It's like a workout.
He did. On the stage in front of 40,000 people.
And it was time too, was it?
Yeah. And I danced in the middle of me lifting. I could have done it four times.
That's a cherry on top of the competition.
Holy
right there.
Cow.
So it's like me doing my collection of things. I have no peers. I was a lot like LeBron. Like LeBron said, the most profound thing I ever heard him say is, man, I'm not competing really against the people that I'm on the court with. I'm competing against ghosts.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's
yeah,
what I was doing.
History.
The history book is what I was after. And you can, man, people could say, oh, well, this guy, he was better than Mark Henry at this. Overall collection of everything, it ain't never been nobody better than me. And I thank God every day that he made me the way that he made me because I was willing to go and put that work in. Nobody else wasn't willing to do that. When I was lifting those implements, the Africa stone, the venture stone, there's a dumbbell called a circus bell.
What is that, Mark?
It's a 220-pound dumbbell. And I lifted it with both hands. It's got a 2.5-inch handle. I lifted it with both hands. And I was like, I got to make one bigger. I want a Mark Henry bell. So we made a bell that's like 270 pounds. We meant for it to be 250 pounds.
Right.
But me and Terry's calculations was off.
Whoops.
And like oh, I lifted it one time. And then when I lifted it, we put it in this box. Now you can't get it out the box.
Uh-uh. It's in a treasure chest now.
it's in the Letcher Stark Center.
Wow.
It's in the north end of the stadium. I'm the only person ever on earth to lift that. It's Thor's hammer, man.
270 pounds.
It is. Yeah, it's stuck to the ground.
Wow. Like, it's in that box, and you'd have to cut the box open to get it out.
And it's been in that box since y'all put it in
it's
there.
It's been in that box since I put it in there.
Wow.
I remember some of those days you were training for some of that because we stored the Apollo wheel in the back.
Y'all spot me sometimes.
Yeah, in the football weight room. You would, I remember, Billy, first time I ever saw him like really lift. I was a young coach here at Texas. He had like 8 plates and some change and making it like jingle like at the top. And I was like, who is this human being? You just come down there and score. You different days, you'd come train down that weight room.
Ship.
Yeah.
And, what was a big
Mad
big
Dog?
Big Bruce,
Shep, Mad Dog,
Mad Dog, you,
right,
Terry. I would have like 6 spotters, and then all the UT football players used to like want like
a fan club.
Oh my God, how much is that? And then I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Tony Brackens. Tony Brackens was like, okay, this is a 45 and a 45 and a 45. Shit, I don't know. It's a lot. And I'm trying to focus. And he made me laugh in the middle of me being about to lift 900 pounds. And I still lifted it.
Tony Brackens. That's so funny.
He had me laughing, man.
He couldn't do the math.
He was like, it's a 45 and a 45 and a 45 and a 40. It's a lot. This dude, somebody get him away from the bar, please.
Wow.
I love him, though.
Yeah.
Hey, he a man of God, man. He preach now. Like, you know, I've actually been to their church. Man, that dude is special.
That's great.
Mark, how did, just go into your childhood a little bit, I'm just curious, growing up in Silsby, right?
Yeah.
How did that influence who you would become? I mean, because for our listeners, Mark, me and Billy were talking about this, you're like the most successful guy I've ever met in the history of the world. One of these top outlier guys, but you're so humble, hardworking, and you love people.
Like, I love people.
But you don't find that today. It's hard to find those combinations. So how did growing up influence who you become today?
My mother said it takes a village of people to raise a kid. I grew up in an environment where I avoided racism because of my greatness. Like, very few black people get to walk into a situation where you're so well respected that people, that, like, I've heard underhand racism that would make you laugh, but it was painful. Like, man, you good for one of them. Mm-hmm. Shit like that. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in an environment where there was racism, but a lot of it never touched me because I brought everybody together. I was everybody's kid.
Oh, that's crazy.
When you go back home to Silsby, are you a hometown hero and people still look
up
to you?
Oh, my God, yeah. Man, I still sponsor our little dribblers.
That is awesome.
Like, it's if they need something, they know to call me because I'm always going to support the kids.
And weightlifting and powerlifting, do you go back to a lot of, I guess, local meets and competitions in the state of Texas? No.
I have not been to a powerlifting meet since 97. And I have not been to an Olympic weightlifting competition. I went to one. I went to the World Championships in Houston right before COVID. And I went to that only because I was working with the Houston Sports Authority. I was helping Janice Burke. And because they had the World Championship coming to Houston, that was the only reason I did it. Mm. Because I was so soured on the Olympic weightlifting world didn't come to my aid. When in 96, and I snatched 182.5 and clean jerk 225 leading up until going to the games, and then I get to the games, I snatch 82.5. All right, I'm finna do. I miss 185, tore my intercostals, and then I got hurt, and I could only do the opener. 200 kilos was where they started the bar. No warm up.
Clean.
They spraying ice spray on me, and I'm just in so much pain. I don't know if you ever tore the muscles in between your ribs, but it felt like you could reach in there and grab something. That's how bad it burned and hurt. And I was like, they were like, Mark, I know you hurt. But if you lift this, our team will get 11 points and we'll place in the top 10 overall for the first time since the 70s.
Yeah,
and I was like, it wasn't about me at that point. And that's when I'm at my best. When it's not about me, the focus ain't on me. I'm at my best when I'm working for other folks. And that's what I did. I went out there and no warm-up, 200 kilos. Go grab 440 pounds and clean it, and then jerk it overhead and hold it. I got two white lights and one red because on this side where the rib tore, where the cartilage tore, my arm was doing this. And he said that I wasn't stable, which I probably wasn't. But I made the lift, and our team placed 10th overall at the Olympics.
Incredible, yeah.
And that was more valuable to me than winning the gold medal. And I knew I wasn't going to win the gold medal when I went there because I saw people in the warm-up doing crazy stuff. I watched somebody miss a 240 clean and jerk as they last warm up. They opened that 240.
They get it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bro, like it was wild to see people snatch 200 kilos in the warm up room. I'm like, 200 kilos snatch?
Yeah.
Man, I thought I was doing good with that 182.5. I was so proud of myself.
Yeah, that's a different load.
So, like, it was.
How those guys treat you, Mark? The
man,
lifters?
I'm so well respected in the world of lifting. I did a fundraiser here in Austin. At the Van Zandt I'm on the board now of the U.S. Weightlifting Foundation. And we raised like $140,000 for the athletes. Wow. And I hadn't been to a competition. I didn't know nobody's names. I did it because it was the right thing to do. And the people that do work when ain't nobody watching, them the ones I like to hang out with. Yeah. You know, I'll sit in there and I ask questions, man, why you do that? Nobody else wasn't going to do it. Them the people I hang out with. Mm-hmm. Not the chess beaters.
No. They out there today.
I watch the chess beaters, though. I like being entertained. If they really good.
Hey, man, we hope you enjoyed that interview, that first part with Mark Henry. Man, the physical feats that he has accomplished as an athlete are just mind-blowing. So, great episode, first session. Billy, what'd you think?
Talking to Mr. Mark Henry about his career, you know, he kind of flew through his accolades and things he's accomplished. I don't think we can really touch base on everything. We just don't have enough time, to be honest. This man has accomplished a lot. But episode 2 is going to line up to really, you know, hone in on just not his accolades and his athletic career, but also his personal life of who he is as a person.
Yeah, and to your point, if you probably can pick up, he's definitely a personality. He's a character. You can see why he excelled so well in WWE. Not only is he strong, but he's a showman too. He knows how to engage and help people focus on what they're doing. And so anytime we're around him, he just draws the best out of me. I know he does the same for you. So, hey, hope you guys enjoyed that first part. Don't forget to tune in again. This is an Olympics special edition. We'll do part 2 of the interview with Mark Henry here soon. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks so much for tuning in and listening to this episode of the Team Behind the Team podcast. For future episodes, go to iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher. We definitely want to keep having great guests on the show and great content. So if you have a moment, please go to iTunes, leave a rating and review, and let us know how we're doing. I'm Donnie Mabe, and thanks so much for tuning in.